I'm excited today to have Stacy Steganga on the podcast. I think she's going to be able to share a lot of great value with you guys on her real estate investing journey and her story. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And A plus on my last name. You nailed it.
Yes. Steganga. I got it.
Yes.
Yeah. The name Josiah is hard enough for people. And then when you couple that with my last name, which is Smeltzer,
yes.
When I introduce myself to people, sometimes they can't tell what I'm saying at all. And yes. They say, Joe?
Yeah.
And I'm
the
like,
blank
no.
There.
It's not Joe. Like yeah. Joe is, it's funny because people want to call me Joe and that's like, I hate that. Like Joe is not what I want to be called. So
yeah. Totally
anyway,
fair.
But yeah, let's get into your story and stuff. So tell us how you got started in real estate investing. Tell us, you know, where you're located, what you do, and we'll dive into this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a nurse. I've worked in critical care for over 11 years. And I've also simultaneously been serving in the military. Super grateful I'm at 18, so very excited for my retirement. Thank you. I just moved all around the world, all around the states, worked in multiple different states for nursing. And it was a massive pain point for me that I decided to finally move to Denver, Colorado, which is where I still live. My family lives here and I wanted to be closer to them and kind of finally settle down and get some roots. And when I did that, my income cut in half. Healthcare professionals are paid horribly in Denver. Part of it was a massive increase in cost of living, mostly started when weed legalized, worsened with all the tech that's moved in here. It is a phenomenal place to live, so it's justified, but yeah. Healthcare needs to get it together. But anyways, I was in my mid-30s when I moved here, and 50% income cut is massively painful when you're an established adult.
Yeah.
So I struggled massively with it. Depressed. I loved critical care, but I just had this massive breakdown. And long story short, I ended up finding Scott Trench's book, Set for Life. It's what changed my life. I know for a lot of people, it's the Purple Bible, but that was it for me. My favorite thing about his book is that it really goes deep into how we're doing the American dream all wrong. And we're basically imprisoning ourselves to our careers by buying all of these liabilities. So it changed everything for me. And that's what got me interested in real estate. And that's truly the segue that got me into investing in real estate.
I love it. Yeah, the idea that the American dream is... I mean, what was communicated to me when I was growing up, which is kind of, it's a formative time in your life when you're a kid and you're growing yeah. up and you're being taught what you need to do, right? Mm-hmm. And what I learned was you need to study hard in school and get a job and make yourself useful to an employer
yep.
and make a good living and then invest some of that money in your 401k, keep your employer happy, keep your job. You could occasionally change jobs and level up, right? And then eventually you'll make enough money that you'll have enough to retire, and that's like your life, you know? And the problem...
And yeah, buy the nicest house that you possibly can afford.
Right, yes. Right. And the problem with that is that doesn't fit everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm entrepreneurial. It's in my DNA. And me trying to climb the 9-to-5 world ladder, it was like I was a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And I know there's others like that too. I mean, it was so bad that when I was there, it was like, I felt bad for them because I didn't want to be there so much. And I did my best to always have a good attitude and work hard and everything else. But, you know, you want to do something you love.
Yes.
And so when you're in an environment where you feel like you're stifled or you're not doing the right thing with your life, it's like it can kind of like steal your soul a little bit, you know?
Yes, that's exactly the way I describe it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea that the American dream is that is mm-hmm. is kind of it's led a lot of people down the wrong path. And that's one reason I wanted to start this show, because I believe there's another way, right?
Absolutely. And
real estate did that for me. Mm-hmm. And I know you're going to tell the same story, which I love. So let's talk about how that took place.
Yeah. So first, I always have to recognize that I always recommend to people to niche down as early on as possible. I spent 2 years in analysis paralysis, and it was for two reasons. A, as a nurse and on a single income, it was truly, and I truly mean blood, sweat, and tears, especially in the nursing career. And I was so afraid of losing that initial savings. Scott Trench refers to it as the runway, but your nest egg, your whatever you want to call it. I was crippled with fear. But then the other thing is that I started without clarity. And thank goodness I had a mentor that pointed out to me, like, you seem to really be struggling in your W-2. You need to stop looking at the Denver market, which is what I was doing at the time. And he just pointed out, like, this is an appreciation market. You're looking for cash flow. Hmm. When he said that to me, it was like a light bulb. So I was actually able, and this is the blessing in disguise. When I worked in Florida, I started my training in trauma there. And I worked in ERs and other things. So I was able to pick a market and then use my nursing knowledge for gentrification to buy in the perfect growing neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it worked out massively before I even realized what I was doing, because I ended up buying a duplex. My first one was in October 2020. I bought my second duplex in May of 21, and both of them doubled in value almost by the end of 21. So that's when I did a cash out refi, and I was able to buy my third duplex cash in the beginning of 22.
Love it. Love it. Did you do house hacking on any of those, or did you just buy those as investment straight up?
Yep. Straight up investments, all long-term, 100% occupancy, all inherited tenants, which was a massive potential for a pain point. It turned out to be phenomenal. And yeah, just super grateful. I did move into a house hack in Denver, though, to help me compound my savings, but I did not own it. So I've lived in a house hack ever since.
Yeah, I love it. So you figured out, so did you do the burst strategy on this, or did you just save up the down payment and just buy them?
Yeah, I saved up the down payment. I did not end up doing any rehab or updates to them at all. That cash out refi was purely because of the market appreciation, which was that unique timing of COVID and the amount of people that were moving to Florida specifically during the time. It was just by proxy of that cascade that I gained so much value without doing any renovations.
I love it. So What's the status of these properties now? Are they still rented? Have you raised the rents any? I know you said you did a refi and then you took that money to buy more properties. And by the way, this time period where you did this, we were doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, so were a lot of other people. That was like the golden window, right?
Yeah.
And people were, the funny thing is, people were talking about how housing was too expensive. Mm-hmm. And it cracks me up because it's like, look at now, everything's as much or more now, and rates are double or more. And so it's like the stuff back then, there were a lot of deals that would cash flow. And it's like, that's what you need is cash flow, right? In the rental property game. So, what are you doing with those properties now?
So they're all still long-term rentals. I have been very blessed to have a ton of rent appreciation as well. So my cash flow is ridiculously high. I will always continue to advise to people that are listening that at a minimum, so my metric, I kind of mirrored Brandon Turner's when I was analyzing properties, and he'd use the $200 per door with a minimum of 10% cash on cash ROI. So I started with those metrics, and let me say that it is a very solid foundation to start from, because at every single one of my properties, there was some surprise in an expense. One of them is even just a $30 electric bill for a well pump, and they didn't even find that it was hooked to well water on my home inspection. So you're just always going to have these surprises. And so that's why I love that $200, because if something cuts into it, you're still most likely going to end at $100 per door in cash flow. So love that. But now I have upwards of $500 to $700 in cash flow per door, again, because of that rent appreciation. My fourth duplex that I ended up buying, I lovingly refer to it as my nightmare property. I am very excited to sell that. But yeah, otherwise I plan to keep the other three.
So what can you tell? I wanted to hit on something you said earlier before we move on, and that is the idea of an appreciation market versus a cash flow market. Mm-hmm. And obviously the sweet spot, you're looking for something that's an appreciation market and a cash flow market.
Absolutely.
That could be difficult to find, right? But take Nashville, Tennessee, for example. That's an appreciation market, right? It's going up rapidly. The price is already really high. It's much more difficult to cash flow on a rental property there versus an example where we used to own stuff was Little Rock, Arkansas. Little Rock is a cash flow market. It's slow rate of appreciation, even though, you know,
it's becoming trendy now. I see
it. Over the last, you know, 5 years when all the stimulus happened, it obviously started appreciating faster because of inflation, but it is a lower appreciation market, but the cash flow is really good. Well, when we started investing there, our cash flow was great, but we started looking at the historical appreciation rate there, and we were like, this isn't really going to probably get us where we want to be because it's not going to appreciate enough. And that's where, as a real estate investor, you want the cash flow, but you don't want to invest somewhere where it's just keeping up with inflation. You want to be outpacing inflation, right? You want it to be an inflation hedge.
Yeah.
Because if you're just keeping up with inflation, you're not really making ground outside of the principal being paid off, right? So we looked at Fort Worth, Texas, and Fort Worth, and I knew that market because I used to be an appraiser out there, but Fort Worth was, we were able to get cash flow. So it was cash flowing and the appreciation prospects were really good. So we moved our stuff out of Arkansas over to Fort Worth, and the stuff just went crazy, and it cash flowed the whole time. And I was trying to get $200 a door. That was my line in the sand as well. Some of them did better, some of them did worse, but like you said, we always had surprises. And that's the thing I would caution single family investors or new investors with going into single family investing. Like, you will have a lot of surprises.
Absolutely.
Plan for it and have enough money set aside that you can deal with it. And it doesn't come in a straight line. Mm-hmm. It comes in massive chunks. So you'll have 1 month where nothing happens, and the next month you gotta fix a water heater or replace an air conditioner, or thing that kept happening to us. We kept having gas lines bust under the ground, and the city would make us repair it. So it was like, that was like $3,500 every time that would happen. And it was with 20 properties, you know, it was happening every other month. And it takes away a couple years of cash flow when you add it all up. So let's, what are you willing to tell us about this property that's been the nightmare property?
Yeah, so the biggest component of it was that it's a flip. And I was buying it. It was supposed to be turnkey. Yes. Keyword supposed to be. I had the pleasure of taking it down to the studs twice. So the first biggest thing is that, going back to what you said earlier about how when you're trying to catch a market because it's on fire, that is exactly what led me into this bad decision. I look back now and I will say it was the most emotional decision I had made in real estate. Up until that point, it was a clear cut. I followed the numbers. The numbers helped me take the emotion out of it, because there's no reason to stress when you've done a really good job analyzing a property. It either makes sense or it doesn't. You buy it or you don't. This property, though, because the market was appreciating, all the values were going up. It was on the brink of the numbers not making sense anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it was a fear type emotional decision. Like, if I don't close on this, I'm not going to be able to buy any more real estate in this market. So it was rushed in that sense, or just not made from such a clear place. Mm-hmm. But then outside of that, the second big feeling point was that the seller didn't disclose all the fraudulent work. Florida, I did not know to even consider this, but Florida is not a state where you are required to pull permits, legally required to pull them before work is done. Therefore, there's no inspection. Or whether it's supposed to be done, the contractors on a very consistent basis do not do that in Florida. You really have to like find one and request for it to happen. My home inspector did not pick up on any of the fraudulent work. They did not disclose the fraudulent work. So the long story short is, as soon as I closed, and I mean as soon as I closed, the AC stopped working. That was supposed to be brand new. And it was just a cascade after that. Everything was wrong. The electrical system, it looked like a two-year-old mangled these electrical wires. There were open splices underneath the house. Just like all sorts of horrendous things. The plumbing was all brand new. Looks great. Didn't work. So yeah, I'm Ouch. Like, I don't know how much you want me to go into. It was a six-figure loss.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was over 103,000 was the last time I added it up. I do need to do that again. But yeah, choosing your home inspector wisely and not making emotional decisions based on fear are the two biggest takeaways that I can advise to people. And then also knowing what the requirements are for your vendors in your state as far as licensing requirements. I didn't know in Florida to be a home inspector, you can take like a 30-minute online course and then just pay for an LLC, which is like minimal $75 in Florida. Had no clue until I realized all these massive misses. So yeah, being aware of those things.
Well, I got really burned. We've gotten burned multiple times on different things going wrong in our real estate deals. And like we were talking about before, it is inevitable when you do this that you will have something terrible happen. Here's the good news. The silver lining in your story is that you have all these other properties cash flowing and you have those properties being paid down. They're appreciating. And even though you have this loss, let's say for some reason you don't get paid back this $100,000, which I hope you do. But even if you lose this $100,000, you're still going to become a millionaire because of real estate. So
that's correct.
So I want people to hear this, not to think every deal you buy is going to turn out like this. This is the outlier. This is what happens in a worst case scenario. But sometimes it does happen. Like we've had some rough things happen. We had one contractor that showed up to our place and did work for a couple months. And this was out of state. Like I was in Alabama. This was going on in Little Rock. And he was sending us pictures of the work that was being done. And he was recommended by a close friend of mine. So I trusted him, right?
Yeah.
And he took draws and we were getting pictures and he took a couple draws. And something just felt off about it to me. And so I hired somebody else to go over there, which I should have done to begin with. This is totally on me. I set myself up for being burned by this, but this was also at the beginning of my real estate investing tenure. The guy goes over there and he hadn't done anything. I mean, he was taking pictures of another job and just taking our money, and dude had a drug habit and he had done this to like six people at once. And he stole, it was like hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it was a massive mess, but you know, I learned a good lesson on that. We lost that money, but the funny thing is that property, we hired another contractor. They finished the renovation. We did the refi and we still burned out of that property. So
awesome.
Including the money we lost. So it's like things can work out. I hope the situation, you know, improves for you over time. Hopefully it does. But yeah, I will say this too. You said you made an emotional decision with buying the property. That to me is probably the thing in real estate that can get you in the most trouble.
Absolutely.
That I've done before as well. We lost money on a flip one time and it was, I just wanted to flip property. I wanted to flip houses and we were having trouble finding leads and I bought one that I probably shouldn't have bought and it just, everything on it went sideways.
How was that?
Yeah. Yeah. And the funny thing is we sold it. I think we lost $25,000 or something.
Yeah.
And if we had just rented that property and kept it, we looked at it now, we would have made like $150,000 on it.
Wow.
So there is a way to even reposition these terrible deals where they actually will make you money eventually.
Yep.
But sometimes it's best to just cut your losses and move on.
Absolutely. You know? And that's the point where I'm personally at, because it's more of a time factor than anything for me. But yeah, I fully recommend that you try to hold it as long as it makes sense. But for me, it's just the time cost is so extreme at this point.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay. So tell me what you do full time right now for a living.
So I actually am down to part time. I've almost finished. I've almost finished replacing my income. So I only work 20 hours as a nurse currently.
Okay. Okay. So you're doing 20 hours as a nurse and then the rest of your time is spent building your real estate business pretty much? Sweet.
Pretty much. I did take over management of all of my properties this year because I'm doing real estate professional. So Smart. Excited. Yeah. Excited about that, but it was helpful for that. And then I'm also working on my first commercial acquisition for multifamily. Spend a lot of time researching and doing stuff for that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the benefits of being a real estate professional and qualifying as a real estate professional.
Yeah.
Tell me why you made that decision.
So a huge part was actually to recoup some of my losses. I consider myself very blessed to be a nurse and to be able to sustain a six-figure loss. But it was extremely hard on me and my bank account. It completely drained my reserves. So that was a massive reason. And then also because I am trying to make my way out. So just having that tax benefit for my last year in my W-2. So I hope.
Yes.
Those were the big reasons. I also, it was like a perfect juncture of pain points, was having a really big issue with property management. And so it was just extra incentive for me to take over the property management, learn all the lessons to be learned with property management, but then also be compensated with that tax benefit. So it was that trifecta that I decided to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah, the tax benefits of being a real estate professional, of qualifying as a real estate professional, are very attractive. So
yes,
for those of you who are not aware of this, take, for instance, one of my vacation rental properties. Like the last one we bought, I think it was close to $2.4 million. Okay. 20% of that deal goes to the land. So 20% of 2.4 is 480,000. So the rest, so 2.4 million minus 480, we'll call it 500,000.
Yeah.
2.4 minus 500,000 is 1.9 million. That could be depreciated. Okay. Now you can accelerate the depreciation and you get a third of that 1.9 million that can be taken in this year, it's 80% of that one third that can be taken in year one. And if you're a real estate professional and you're spending more than 50% of your time during the year on real estate and real estate activities, you can take that accelerated appreciation and it can cover over all of your income.
Yes.
If you're unaware of this and you want to talk to somebody, go talk to a CPA that's knowledgeable about real estate. But this is the massive benefit to being a real estate professional, is there are massive tax savings available to you if you do it right. Now, if you've got a full-time W-2 job and you're doing that, it's going to be challenging to qualify for it. That's why I'm saying make sure and go talk to somebody so you can make sure you're doing all this right. Because I am not a CPA, so don't just go off this. Go talk to a professional on it. But the tax benefits in being a real estate professional are awesome. And so I'm sure you're experiencing that right now since you're doing the part-time nursing thing and then doing real estate.
Yes. Yeah. And it's massively beneficial too, to specifically high net worth earners. Yes. So that was the most interesting part for me. I feel like probably a little more fearful than normal, because a lot of the case law is a highly litigated benefit because it is so massively beneficial. So a ton of people really strive to use this because it's one of the greatest levers in the tax code. But because of that reason, there was actually a ton of case law on medical professionals. So I wanted to make sure I was crossing my T's, dotting my I's, because I was like, I cannot go to jail. The IRS scares me. So definitely look into it. There are a lot of nuances to the rules with it. So just make sure you're following.
Yes.
Because it is not something to be taken lightly.
It's not. That's why, you know, I only work in real estate and I'm a broker and appraiser and have all these rental properties. It's like I qualify, and so I am dead set on maximizing all that.
Yes.
Like if you're, you know, there's a lot of people that are working full time in medicine, like, you know, doctors, and they're trying to also use this, like it gets a little stickier with all that. And not saying you can't do it. There's a whole group of people that are, but look into the rules and regulations around it and make sure you're complying fully so you can make sure and keep the tax man happy. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about this commercial deal you're wanting to do. What's your goal with that?
So just to finish replacing my income, like I said earlier, I'm almost at FI, but I've also just wanted to scale for economies of scale. I love duplexes. They've made perfect sense for me, but I was wanting to diversify out of the Florida market just for natural disasters.
Right.
There's currently massive insurance issues in the state as well. So just kind of going into the Midwest market and then into multifamily.
Okay.
So I am going to JV versus syndication. So that's another exciting component. I'm a huge advocate for healthcare reform, and I am super excited to be taking it down with two other medical professionals. And so it's just a very special thing to help other people and work with them to all collectively diversify our income and find a better way.
That's awesome. Where specifically are you looking, and what size deal are you looking to buy for your first one?
So 5 to 30 units, most specifically staying smaller, again, that low hanging fruit that a lot of syndications aren't going to want to go for. And then Midwest markets, we're specifically bullish on South Dakota. I work for the Air Force up there, and then there's a lot of interesting medical components in the state. So hoping to, again, leverage that insider knowledge to their market. So fingers crossed.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about some things that could help people that are thinking about getting into real estate. When did you start? How long ago, like amount of years or months did you start? And then how many units do you have now?
So I started learning in 2018. It was almost 2 years to the T. I started November 2018. I bought my first duplex October 2020. So my greatest piece of advice to help people get started is to actually choose a strategy within real estate that most aligns with what you're trying to achieve. Gotcha. I think a lot of people come into it and they have this like shiny object syndrome. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Short-term rental is amazing. It has so much cash flow. So they go towards that. Not realizing it's a full-time job.
Yeah.
Short-term rental is not passive. So if you're in this for passive income, you need to swing to the other side and be looking at syndications, long-term rental, triple net, things of that nature. Just like really having people align. But to answer your question, I currently have 8 doors, all in the Florida market. And I think that was everything you asked me, right?
Yeah. So what I like about this is there isn't only one way to do real estate. You don't just have to do the BRRRR strategy or just put 20% down on everything or just do multifamily. There is a way, if you're a working professional and you want to get into this, just to save up some money and go buy a property.
Absolutely.
That will change your life if you hang on to the properties.
Yep.
That's the key. And I talk about this all the time. Flipping is great, right? Flipping is great, but it's a job.
Yeah.
Flipping is a job. So you make that, if you have a successful flip and you make your $35,000 or whatever, you're going to pay short-term capital gains tax on it. So you're not walking away really with $35,000. You're going to pay that short-term capital gains. And not all your flips make $35,000, right? So sometimes you get a bad flip like we did where we lost $25,000. So we had, you know, we flipped probably done 30 flips to date. And we've only had one that cost us that much. We've had some that just barely made anything. And we've had some make a lot.
Yeah.
But on average, they make great money. But when you get the bad ones, it can be a bad thing. But
yes.
When you get the rental properties and you hang on to them for 20, 30 years, or you hang on to them for 10 years and they've tripled in value and you sell in 1031 into apartments, that's like how you create long-term wealth. So
absolutely.
So the awesome thing about what Stacy's done is she took where she was and she invested in real estate, and she's done refinances, moving the money into other deals, and she's leveling up now, moving into multifamily. And that's the path, I think, to massive wealth creation and success in this is just do what you can where you are, make progress, and then level up as you
Absolutely.
Start gaining more equity in your deals.
I also think reserves is a super boring thing that people don't love to talk about. It's not very sexy. And it is what saved me from not losing my entire portfolio when that nightmare property happened. So just having a really strong respect for the importance of reserves. I think a lot of people get caught up in this scaling, how many doors, how many properties I can buy, just all of those things. And to your point, like you can buy one property and hold it for 30 years and be set in retirement.
Yes.
So while I appreciate all the like energy for financial freedom, be a millionaire, buy all the doors, it's great. But align your goal with what you want. Like, don't just chase someone else's dream. Because when you have that strong why, it's going to make it worth it when you're in the stress, because it will come. There will be issues. So just having a healthy respect for that and doing what lights you on fire with reserves.
Right. Absolutely. And the reserve thing is so big. Like when we were in, when COVID happened, we were in the middle of flipping 10 houses we had just purchased at once. And we had hard money running on that. And when COVID happened, the hard money lender wanted his money back.
Yep.
And it's like, we had just started that loan and it just, and then we just had, it was just a cascade of all these things that we had to have reserve capital for to get through it. Now we took the reserves we had, invested in the properties, got them renovated, got them rented, refinanced. Once the market started going up, ended up selling those. And that's how we have all the vacation rentals we have now. So we've actually gotten all of our money back at this point. But if we hadn't had those reserves, we might have lost the entire portfolio. So yeah. Just like,
and
you.
And to that point, too, another big thing that I feel like a lot of attention hasn't been called to is during that time, there were people that I knew, investors, that were relying on an personal line of credit or a business line of credit, having that line open as their reserves. And all of them got called due, or all of them got closed during COVID because everybody was tightening those purse strings. So when I say reserves, I do mean cold hard cash. Unfortunately, it sucks to have it sitting in your bank account. We always want to spend it as investors, but it definitely saved me through and through. You never know what's going to happen. So don't rely on a line of credit. It can get shut or called due at any point.
Yes, absolutely. It totally can. Well, this has been an awesome episode. I really appreciate you sharing your story with us and for all the tips and sharing the failures and the things that are going badly as well, because that is how real estate works. It's not all, it's not all
rainbows and sunshine.
That is actually the one commonality with all real estate investors, is we all have terrible stuff happen. That's just honestly how it is. It sucks when it happens, but it will happen to you if you're a real estate investor. But the cool thing is you stick with it and you will become a millionaire. And one more thing I wanted to say, you mentioned the talking about number of doors is the most misleading thing that goes on in the real estate circles and the most toxic thing, in my opinion, because somebody will say, I own 200 doors and 50 million in real estate. And you look into it further, they did a syndication and they own 3% of 30%, because they syndicated. And so they actually have ownership in that like 200 doors. They actually, when you boil it down, it's like they own like two doors.
Yes.
And they own, you know, they actually have ownership in like $500,000 of real estate or something.
Yep.
So it's like, you take our portfolio, for example. We had 20 properties back before we sold it all and went to vacation rentals. We had 20 single family houses in Fort Worth. Those were worth $5 million. But I owned it with my business partner. So if I said I had 20 doors, it doesn't sound like I'm making as much progress as the guy that's got 200 doors.
Yeah.
But I had 2.5 million in real estate then, and this other guy's got 200,000 or
exactly.
So that's why you don't get hung up on how many doors people have, because it is a vanity metric. Mm-hmm. And be leery of people that are advertising vanity metrics, because typically they have the hat, but not the cattle, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, it's like, be like you were saying, be true to yourself. Just figure out what you need to do and do it. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing around you. There's always going to be somebody that's being more successful than you. And there's always going to be people that haven't gotten to the point that you're at. So just be humble, try to make progress, and don't get caught up in the vanity metrics.
Yes. Yeah. And I do think it's easier for you to achieve and make progress when you're following somebody that aligns with what you're trying to achieve.
I
think that was the biggest mistake. I was following like massive famous people like Brandon Turner, phenomenal person. But like when I'm starting and I have zero doors, why am I trying to learn from somebody that has 500? So just really appreciating that there are things to learn from people that only have five, and you can more easily model after them, achieve that success, and then try to be like Brandon Turner.
Yeah. Well, and Brandon Turner started with zero, just like everybody else. And
exactly.
Somebody gave the advice the other day. I heard this and I loved it. They said, find somebody that's a level up from where you are.
Yep.
And follow what they're doing to be successful, you know? And that makes a lot of sense. Like, if you've got 20 doors, find somebody with 50 doors.
Exactly.
You know, if you've got no real estate, find somebody that's got five in the last 2 years.
Yep.
and like see what they did, because there's a big difference in zero and five. There's a huge difference, you know what I mean? And the person that's got the five doors, they figured out how to make traction, and that's where it's at, because you can apply that same principle to get you from five to 200.
Exactly. So, yeah. I was like, there's no need to reinvent the wheel in real estate. It's truly modeling is perfect. You can just do what everybody else did.
Exactly. And the market gives you windows for things, like the golden window that was there while everybody was saying
that we didn't even realize.
Well, it's just so funny because everybody was saying the market's overpriced. You know, I heard that when I started in 2018 is when we started building our portfolio, and everybody was telling me it was overpriced, and we got deals all day long. And and then we sold those in 2021 when the market went crazy, and we 1031'd into vacation rentals, and then our portfolio profit exploded.
Yeah.
And so if I had listened to everybody telling me it was too expensive, I was like, well, I mean, the interest rates on these are below the level of inflation. So why would I not borrow as much money as I can to buy cash flowing rental rental properties? And
well, if the numbers make sense, like don't listen to the naysayers anyways. Like
And then, you know, if the property's gonna cash flow, if the numbers make sense, and you're locking these in on a 30-year note, it's not like you've got a renewable in 2 years. It's like I'm locking a 3.5% interest rate in for 30 years.
Yeah.
The numbers work. Like inflation is running high like it was back then. Like back then it was like 7%.
Yes.
Well, if this property just goes up 7% a year, it's gonna double in, you know, it's like 8-9 years or something. You know, it's like that's I should buy as much of this as I can get, you know.
Absolutely.
As long as the numbers work. So hey, thank you so much for joining us on
this episode
and sharing your story. And I'm excited to see where you go from here. Tell the listeners how they can connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. My Instagram is my favorite place. I am trying to gather all the people to support that healthcare reform. Even if you're not a healthcare professional, if you ever have a family member that's sick, or if you unfortunately become sick, these things really matter. It is getting really bad in America. So I really appreciate your support. My handle is invest4freedom_RN. And as a bonus for your support, you get all my free education, all my lessons. I share everything for free. So please find me there. I love to connect.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, we're going to wrap this episode up. I appreciate y'all joining us. I love you guys. And we'll catch you on the next episode.